This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
Yes, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also, SiriusXM Channel 80, wherever you get your podcasts. Smart speaker. Wherever you get your smart speaker. Where does someone get a smart speaker? I don't know. I don't know anything about a smart speaker, Raj. And maybe I need to learn. Dodgers fans, I know you're upset with the Astros. But did the fans go too far last night? 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Lakers make the biggest moves, or at least after Westbrook. Westbrook was the biggest move, and then they made the most of them, right? Dwight Howard's back, and they went out and got Trevor Ariza and Carmelo Anthony, and they re-signed Talen Horton Tucker. They give him $32 million over, 3 years. And THT going to be a good player one day. He's already pretty good, and he's going to be better. They added shooting. You know, Wayne Ellington probably starting on this team, but they added shooting. But did they add shooting at the expense of defense? I mean, they kind of needed to add. Like, here is the issue they had. Westbrook was an amazing move to pull off for spare parts. I like Kyle Kuzma okay. A KCP is a rotation-type piece, even on a championship team. He proved that. One of your best eight, let's say. And they get a future first-rounder, and they get a second-rounder back with Russell Westbrook. You turn spare parts into Russell Westbrook. Montrezl Harrell, six-man type, but, you know, and like an old-school power forward, but doesn't have range on the jump shot or anything like that. You turn that into Russell Westbrook? Well, Russell Westbrook's bad, detrimental. No. Russell Westbrook every year is on a new team with new players, new teammates. And he has to get to know them. And he has to figure out how to help the team win. And he spends the first half of the year doing that and always looks bad. Looks like he's hurting his team. And then he figures it out and his teammates figure it out. And over the second half of the last, four seasons, after spending the first half, we in the media, the fans saying, Russell Westbrook's now finally slowing down or he's not good or it's his bad habits are catching up to him, whatever it is. Second half, we're going, we spoke too soon. Russell Westbrook's an MVP caliber player still. So you get that for spare parts. That's amazing. Now you have a problem. Westbrook doesn't shoot it. I mean, he shoots it a lot. That's one of the problems. It doesn't hit him a lot. LeBron is not a shooter. I mean, he can shoot average for his position. And AD is not a shooter. Also, given his height, he's an average shooter, I guess I'd say. And when I say shooter, I'm talking about free throws and threes, right? I mean, they can score in the paint. They can knock down some jumpers. I'm talking about free throws and threes. And so you need shooting. You need knockdown shooters, catch and shoot guys around LeBron now. Because he has a guy who can also create, obviously, and then some in Westbrook. They go out and get Carmelo Anthony. That's not exactly Carmelo. Carmelo proved me wrong for sure on the Blazers when I was like, he should go play in China. Because he doesn't have the, I said that about two or three years ago, he doesn't have the kind of game that translates well to a role player in the modern NBA. It's not his fault. He was one of the great all-time scorers in every way imaginable, right? But that was in a different kind of NBA, heavy ISO NBA. And he could even be the centerpiece of a 50-plus win team, drawing a defensive attention and finding the open man. He was quite good at that at one point in his career, in fact. Underrated at it. But he wasn't a 3-and-D guy. He wasn't a guy who was going to be a complementary piece on a team with championship aspirations. He's not a catch-and-shoot three-point guy, and he's not a defender. But what he is a guy who can still score in a variety of ways effectively, but he still needs the ball. You know, like he's ideally suited to be a scoring option off the bench. Maybe the scoring lead, like a scoring leader in your second unit. Wayne Ellington's probably the best shooter on this team right now. But they did. They got a lot of guys who could shoot it. Trevor Ariza, and they brought guys in who could shoot it. On, you know, minimum style contracts. That's what they needed to do. The issue is the Nets not only have three of the best all-around scorers at their size in the history of basketball. Like, tell me a 6'11" guy who could score like KD in the history of basketball. Show me a 6'5" guy. He's an inch shorter than Jordan and Kobe. Who could score like Harden. History of basketball. In that many ways. From that many levels. Same thing with Kyrie. Well, this guy could drive better than Kyrie. I don't know. Kyrie has an argument for greatest handles ever. In fact, I think he wins that argument. probably the greatest layup package of all time, a lights-out shooter from three, great free-throw shooter. He has a mid-range, like with Kyrie. You know? Whatever problem you have with Kyrie, his skills are impeccable. So they don't need the same stuff around them. But then they have Blake Griffin, who posterized Giannis. And the reason that's significant is because Blake Griffin's game was never about his refined. He wasn't Carmelo Anthony, whose skills were so refined on offense. So if he could posterize Giannis right now, he still has that athletic ability, he's kind of the same as he ever was. That was an all-star. Plus, Blake Griffin's your fourth option? Oh, it's a problem. But the Lakers, at least now, I don't know if they have the solution. They have an answer to the problem. We'll see if the answer is good enough. They're the only ones who, if everybody's healthy, can run out a serious answer to the Nets. Nets have three of those dudes. So do the Lakers. Wong in New Hampshire, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, how you doing?
Go ahead, Wong.
Hey, so there's that quarterback controversy in Indy. Mm-hmm. And there's a quarterback that I agree with, Phillip Rivers. I think he would be the number one choice to bring back.
Yeah, I don't think it's a controversy. I mean, Wentz is hurt. There's no controversy. You just got to go get a quarterback now. And Rivers ran your offense well last year. Knows it inside and out, is respected around the league, on the team, likes the coaching staff. Coaching staff likes him, seems open to play. It's a no-brainer. If you lost your quarterback to start the season and you're the Colts, you can't do better than Phillip Rivers. But I wouldn't call it a controversy. I don't think there's anything controversial about it. It'd be a controversy if they decide to bring Nick Foles back. Right, and then Nick Foles does a little better than expected. The line somehow holds up, and Nick Foles does better than expected, and all of a sudden, now you have a quarterback. Is he doing it again to Carson Wentz? Raj, where are you going with this?
Yeah.
I had the call screen up. What's that?
You do have a call, but you have a special person on the caller line, which I was putting up the information because you deleted it. So, bam, there you go.
Chris Mortensen, ESPN NFL insider, senior NFL insider, pardon me. Mort, are you there?
I am here, Max. Been listening to the show. I think I'm going to spoil part of it. This Nick Foles stuff for you.
Okay. Well, I know I'm saying, why would they take Nick Foles instead? Like, you know, if you have the ability to bring back Phillip Rivers, he knows the offense. With Quentin Nelson gone, it's even more important to get a guy who's really familiar with it, can make quick decisions. To me, it's a no-brainer, no?
Well, let's go back a few steps.
All right.
I can report quite safely that the Colts believe that the surgeries for Carson Wentz and Quentin Nelson, as you know, they were not Liz Frank foot injuries, mm-hmm. but they went as good as could be expected. And that means mm-hmm. the Colts are more optimistic that Wentz will be available week one.
Week
12. Yes, and I said that on ESPN and certainly to the Twitter. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be, but they are more optimistic about him being ready week one than week 12 or week 6 or 7 or 8, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, it's not a Liz Frank injury. It was a bone fragment on the outside metatarsal. Quentin Nelson, who weighs, what, like 70 pounds more than Wentz?
Yeah.
He posted last night he will be there week one. And it's his third surgery this offseason. So both of them have high pain tolerance. I know people from the Eagles always said their battle with Wentz was often like, hey, that's why in 2018 he was mad he couldn't play week one coming off that ACL injury the year before in 2017.
More, I was there in L.A. when he got the ACL injury. He completed two passes afterwards.
Yeah, well.
Tough guy.
And so and I think that the injury history is kind of like, it's a little bit exaggerated, but here's what I'm here to say. On the Phillip Rivers stuff, yeah, certainly it would make sense if Wentz was going to be out for the whole season. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, having, messaged with Phillip Rivers last week, he is coaching St. Matthew Catholic High School just like he planned. He will consider, he hasn't ruled out playing late in the season after that St. Michael High School season is over, and that's going to be over in October. So he's not going to abandon that high school team. He's made a commitment to them. And by the way, it would take Carson Wentz being out for the season. Phillip Rivers is not going to come in and play two or three games for you, and then Wentz come back and fill it back up.
More. So what you're telling me right now, talking to Chris Mortensen, setting me straight on some stuff, what you're telling me right now is that if the Colts need someone, let's just say for 3-4 weeks, 5 weeks on the outside, something like that, Phillip Rivers, because of his commitment to his high school team and because of the fact that he'd want to take the ball for the whole season, would not come back for that.
I would say it's unlikely he would. Now, you're creating different hypotheticals here.
Yeah.
Here's what I can tell you where the Colts are at. And they are not a deceitful team, either on record or off record.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're at is that they're more optimistic about Wentz being ready Week one, maybe week two, but week one, there's some optimism there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a pain tolerance issue. It's not, and so therefore, same thing with Quentin Nelson. Now, what they do want to see is if Jacob Eason, who has a big arm, and their offense is going to be based because Carson Wentz has a big arm, their offense is going to be their team is based on defense, run game, big explosive plays down the field.
Right.
Eason had a really good day at training camp today. Okay, big deal. Let's see how he looks. They want to see how he looks in preseason. So if Wentz looks like he's got a chance to come back, say it's not week one, but it's week two,
mm-hmm.
they would open with Eason week one as opposed to, hey, Phillip, come fill in for us for 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
And Phillip's not going to do that. I know everybody who knows Phillip, he wants – if some team gets an injury, and it's got to be a playoff contending team, because what's he missing from his great career is a Super Bowl.
Sure.
It's going to have to be a Super Bowl type playoff contending type team that has an injured quarterback for the rest of the year, not to come in and give you 3 or 4 games and your quarterback comes back and I go to the bench on the sideline holding a clipboard. That's not Phillip Rivers.
Right. Chris Mortensen here on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, reporting that in your opinion, based on what you know, if there's optimism that Phillip Rivers and Quentin Nelson, like really the real good news for Colts fans is if Quentin Nelson, like you don't know what you're going to get with Wentz. We'll wait and see. Quentin Nelson's the best in the business. That's great news for Colts fans that it looks like they're optimistic he won't miss a lot of time. But it looks
that's correct.
It's like there's no Phillip Rivers story yet. Not yet.
Right. I think yet is, and they are committed to seeing how Jacob Eason plays in camp and in preseason. And if it's such a catastrophe, and all of a sudden the prognosis behind the scenes on Wentz has changed to the worst part of that 5 to 12 weeks, because
mm-hmm.
five weeks makes them ready for week one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if it's the worst, they'll consider a veteran quarterback, but not the ones we're talking about. By the way, Frank Reich made his decision on Wentz versus Foles in the offseason when they traded for Carson Wentz as opposed to trading for Nick Foles.
Sure.
And I agree. And Nick Foles is like a wonderful backup quarterback, a really ideal type of guy. But his legend is probably bigger. Even in the year that you mentioned, yes, against the Saints, if Alshon Jeffrey had caught that ball, maybe they would have won. But they beat the Bears 16-15, and that was the doink field goal. Foles had one touchdown and put 16 points on the board. Against the Saints, it was one touchdown, 14 points. So it's good, and I thought the Super Bowl run was spectacular for Nick Foles, but he also has an injury history of his own. He is not the quarterback that Wentz is, and I can tell you this. Wentz, in offseason, the OTAs, and in minicamps, and in the first 5 days of training camp, had them so giddy over how good he looked, they really felt like they got a Super Bowl franchise winning quarterback. And so this is a setback. And I think what we have in our minds is that last year, as you know, Carson Wentz didn't get hurt last year.
Right.
Everybody else got hurt on the Eagles, and he played like he stunk it up.
Yeah, he regressed the last year and a half, I felt. This is a wealth of information from Chris Mortensen right now, ESPN senior NFL insider on the Goodyear Hotline, really filling in the blanks about what's going on with the Colts and Wentz and Quentin Nelson and Nick Foles. By the way, Nick Foles is also not the guy to bring in if you're having offensive line problems. But I want to get on I want to get on to another interesting quarterback situation, and that's San Francisco. On the one hand, they traded a lot of resources to go grab a young, dynamic quarterback in Trey Lance. On the other hand, Jimmy, no first-year quarterback has ever gotten to a Super Bowl, and Jimmy G came one throw away, misses Emmanuel Sanders, or he beats Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. What is the quarterback story in San Francisco?
Well, listen, they for right now, they believe that Jimmy Garoppolo will be their starting quarterback week one. But they did it with Trey Lance, and it was Trey Lance over Mac Jones. And yes, by the way, that was a very close call. But Trey Lance gave Kyle Shanahan visions of, you know what, teams are going to have to defend our offense differently with Trey Lance. We can play 11-on-11 football because he's just a strong, dynamic athlete with big arm, but a great runner, high football IQ. And he has really picked it up in training camp the last couple of days. And I think that he's going to play more games than Jimmy Garoppolo this year. Now, that's me just – I believe he will. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, listen, that playoff run, go back and look at the box scores and see how much that Kyle Shanahan really trusted Jimmy Garoppolo.
Sure, that was obvious.
The trust wasn't there. And when they traded for to get Trey Lance – it wasn't just about Jimmy's injury history. It was a lot. Just there's some annoyances there that with Kyle Shanahan that I think that it's not 100% commitment. Obviously, it's not because they traded a draft bundle to go up there. So right now it's Jimmy G to open the season, but Trey Lance, if he continues to make progress, it makes teams that play Kyle Shanahan play a lot differently.
I want to give you a theory.
That's 11-on-11 football.
I want to give you a theory about Jimmy G, talking to the great Chris Mortensen, ESPN senior NFL insider, fleshing out all these quarterback situations. If you missed it, you can download the podcast and listen to him fill in the details on the Colts, on the Niners. I think that you draft a guy like Trey Lance when Jimmy Garoppolo with the Niners is 24 and he's winning 3 games to every one he's losing. And when he's not there, the Niners are losing 3 games to every one they're winning. So maybe he's not so easily replaced, but it tells me, Chris, what I divine from this is maybe the Niners think they're not quite as close as I or some others may think they are, right? Like, this is not 2 years ago when they made the Super Bowl run. And therefore, hey, if Jimmy G can get it done and the team catches fire, great. And if not, they have their backup plan in place. Do you think the Niners think they're as close as they as the odds seem to think they are?
Yes. I think the Niners think they are close, and I think that's why Trey Lance. I think there's some level of confidence that if Trey Lance continues to progress at the rate he's progressing this training camp, and in the off season, it was what you would expect. But if they progress, I think they believe that Kyle Shanahan has such confidence that they believe they can win with them and present more problems for opposing defenses. The key to the 49ers is that defense. You lost your coordinator, Robert Saleh. You know, Nick Bosa, I had a NFC coach tell me, look, he said, Jimmy G staying healthy is not the key to the 49ers this year. Mm. It's Nick Bosa staying healthy.
Mm-hmm. He's a beast.
It changes their team. And they're going to find – Kyle Shanahan's always going to find a way to run the ball. So they do believe they would be a contender with Trey Lance, but Jimmy G can take it if he continues to – hold on to the job he can take. But I still think Trey Lance plays sooner than later for the 49ers, and that's as to keep them in contention.
Well, we've learned a lot today from Chris Mortensen, Raj, and let this be a lesson to you. Don't make all these assumptions. Talk to the experts first. Great Chris Mortensen, ladies and gentlemen, ESPN senior NFL insider, analyst, the whole shebang. Hey, Mort, thanks a million for jumping on.
All right, Max. Thanks for having me.
Boy, that was some info, boy. Didn't that color it in for you, Raj? That's why I told you got to go get Mort.
Stop that's why you said that you were off. You've been off on summer vacation, and you texted me in the middle of vacation at the pool. Raj, we got to get Mort on. That's the dedication we like about you, Max. That's the dedication.
Coming up on No Doubt, in the world of quarterbacks, is 40 the new 30? Also, let me tell you. The ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $700 on average. And let me tell you, DoorDash is here with Summer of Dash Pass. Right now, Dash Pass members are taking $10 off groceries, alcohol, pet food, and more. Need a nightcap? $10 off. Got a cough? Get relief delivered for less. Want to surprise your crush? Send a gift and save. Try Dash Pass for free and get special savings, exclusive menu items, and $0 delivery fees year-round. Get more from your neighborhood now with Dash Pass in the DoorDash app. And stay cool out there. Terms and conditions apply.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
I'm Christine Lisi. Quarterback Dak Prescott, among the 16 Cowboys players not making the trip to Canton for tomorrow's Hall of Fame game against the Steelers. He'll stay back at training camp for more rehab and rest for his shoulder strain. Prescott hasn't resumed throwing yet. That might happen next week. No need for Dallas to panic over that, insists ESPN's Marcus Spears.
I'm not overly concerned. I'll be concerned if we get to week one and then there's still talk about Dak needing some rest. That's when I'll be concerned. But right now, this much time out, no concern whatsoever because of Dak's makeup more than anything.
Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins and Nate Stanley are back at practice today after completing a five-day stint on the COVID-19 list. They were designated high-risk close contacts after rookie QB Kellen Mond returned a positive test for COVID-19. Dodgers, adding depth to their injury-plagued rotation, agreed to a deal with veteran pitcher Cole Hamels. ESPN's Buster Olney reporting Hamels gets $1 million guaranteed plus $200,000 per start. Tonight, Max Scherzer makes his Dodgers debut against the Astros. 9 Eastern ESPN Radio. LA is 3 back of NL West leading San Francisco. NBA, according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, restricted free agent forward John Collins agreed to a 5-year, $125 million deal to remain in Atlanta.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also on Sirius XM Channel 80. Jumping right back to your calls after No Doubt, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Gonna get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think of this.
No Doubt.
All right, Raj, what do we have today?
Max, we have a birthday in the house today. You know we love the birthdays here. Tom Brady turns 44 today.
Wow.
Ooh, that's right. Hey, but for quarterbacks, 40 is the new 30.
Nah, son, not 30. I'd say 40 is maybe the new 36 or something like that. You know, you got to – it's not what it used to be. You still had effect like quarterbacks were flying really high. The reason I said cliff originally with Tom Brady – was that's what it was for Peyton Manning and Brett Favre. It's like, they could do this to their 50. No, they're 41, and now they can't play anymore. You know, so I thought the same thing would happen to Brady, but it hasn't happened yet. You know, it has not happened yet. He's still going. He's the exception to the rule. But you know, I would say that you see guys in their late 30s, early 40s now, other than Brady. You know, late 30s especially, still really good. I'd say 35 is the new 40. Or vice versa.
Well, Big Ben is 39. I think our man Aaron Rodgers will be 38.
And Rodgers just had a great season. And Roethlisberger had a good bounce back season.
And Ben's falling off, man. I think that's the cliff for sure. Yeah. But hey, the NBA offseason is greater than the NFL's offseason.
Ooh, that's a great one. That's a great question. Because that includes the draft.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Whoa. Yeah, no doubt. I still think at the NBA, the thing about the NBA is it's so clear when a team really improved in the offseason, you know? And there's a lot of player movement. It just makes it more fun. But the NFL's a beast, boy. The NFL draft and, you know, second-year quarterbacks, see what they're – but the real big – like usually like Aaron Rodgers was going to be the big move. He didn't change teams. How often does a guy like Aaron Rodgers change teams? But LeBron James switches teams. James Harden switches teams. Kevin Durant switches teams. So the offseason's a little more lively that way.
Yeah, that's true. Imagine the NFL if they had no franchise tag. That would make it juicy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Man.
Hey, I heard you and Mort talking about it, but, yo, the Colts need to hurry up and just sign Phillip Rivers.
Nah, son, he talked me out of it. Mort talked me out of it. Because if Rivers won't do it until the high school season is actually over, if that's real, then it doesn't make sense if Wentz is. Now, the question is this, and then I would change it to No Doubt. The question is, would Rivers sign up for being the backup for Wentz, who even though Mort said he's not really injury prone, well, he's been hurt plenty in his career and like big injuries. He has a very high threshold for pain. I agree. He's tough. But Wentz misses time. Would Rivers sign up for that? Could you imagine if Rivers somehow won the Super Bowl after it looked like it was all over? Wouldn't that be one of the greatest Super Bowl winning quarterback stories of all time? When Ben Roethlisberger has two, Eli has two. What if Philip Rivers came out of retirement to get one? But it looks like that'll only happen if he agrees to be the understudy, and it sounds like he won't.
All right. Hey, and then we'll end it with this, man. Hey, Raider, this is for you Raider fans out there. Yeah. But Max, John Gruden, he's on the hot seat this year.
No doubt. You know, Sam Acho and I debated this on First Take today. He was like, he should have already been fired. Look, they were 4-12 first year he took over. And he traded Khalil Mack. He's given a 10-year deal. He has the anticipation that he has long horizons to fix the team and make it in his image, whatever. Second year, he's 7-9. Third year, he's 8-8. That's trending in the right direction. Now, if in the fourth year, he's 6-10, 7-9, well, it wouldn't be at 17 games now. But if he's, 9-8 or 8-9, let's say more like 8-9, and you say, okay, wait, dude, we're going in on a half a decade now and you still can't get above 500. I get it. Hot seat. But they're making improvements and they're doing it with a quarterback who's not bad, but he ain't Patrick Mahomes. And they're in a division with Patrick Mahomes. Maybe he doesn't trade Khalil Mack if he knew how good Mahomes would be that first year. So I would say no doubt this year. I would say this year he will be on the hot seat if he's under 500. That's how I would put it.
All right, and you're going to be on the hot seat with these callers if you don't pay off your
John in South Carolina. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, man, it's deja vu all over again.
Mm-hmm.
You got LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, and now you got LeBron, AD, and Westbrook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. Yep.
Oh, without a doubt. LeBron knows how to play with a two-point guard. He hasn't had to do it a lot. This will also save him so much wear and tear not having to bring down the ball. LeBron, people don't give him enough brains as being that, I think they don't, as being that on base, be their coach on the floor knowing what he's doing. And one other real quick thing. I think they could actually have a starting five that would all be gold medal Olympic winners since, the Olympics are going on.
Who's the other winners? Oh, Carmelo and Dwight?
Yeah.
I don't think you can start Dwight on this team. That's not enough shooting. I think Dwight Howard's 15 minutes of Energizer Bunny off the bench at five, at the five. He doesn't shoot at all outside the paint. And you're going to have the only good shooter is Carmelo, and he's not a catch-and-shoot guy, and everyone needs the ball. That's problematic. Shimi in Connecticut, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max Kellerman, long time no talk. What's going on?
And that's a regular who did that, too. What you got, Shimi?
Shimi. Listen, so do you think LeBron is doing this since just doing this just to get KD out? Because remember they were saying that they're doing this all just to get rid of LeBron.
You're saying did KD go to the Warriors so they could both overcome LeBron, and is now LeBron returning the favor? Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is, do you think LeBron and the Lakers is getting all these players just to take out KD, Kyrie, and Harden?
Well, that's who you have to shoot at in the preseason, I think. I mean, you got to look at your own conference, but ultimately, that's what's standing in your way is the big three. And it's a better constructed big three than this one, but this is a legitimate answer to it. You might not win, but you're going to give them a tough series. LeBron, AD, and Westbrook are the kind of best athletes out of the six of those guys, right? Maybe Kyrie has a case, but he's smaller. But they're not as refined in terms of their scoring ability. Better defenders, better athletically, but not as refined skill scoring as the Nets big three. And the Nets big three skill is so refined scoring that I don't think they can be beaten. I think if they're all healthy, it's an unbeatable team. Now, if the Lakers somehow once you put those three together, you don't have enough to surround them with what they need. I don't think the Nets can be beaten, barring injury to the Nets. They have too much. Even Harden's hiccups in the postseason in the past, it's because they needed 50 points a night from this guy practically. But now he can really play pure point guard and have Kyrie and KD as weapons? I don't know what you do about that. And then you have one of the great pure shooters on the team who's not in the big three, and Blake Griffin? Oof, it's a lot. Coming up, Dodgers fans finally got to let the Astros hear it. Dusty Baker had something to say about it, of course. Straight Talk Wireless has rolled out 5G coverage nationwide, and you can get a Samsung Galaxy A32 5G for only $299, no contract. All on America's best networks. Straight Talk Wireless, 5G-capable device required. Actual availability, coverage, and speed may vary.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also, SiriusXM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Tune in to an interleague battle tonight as the Dodgers host the Astros. Coverage begins at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
All right, Dodgers fans finally got a chance to greet the Astros. They gave them a healthy dose of booze and some projectiles, and their team loses to Houston 3-0. Listen to Dusty Baker, Astros manager, at the postgame presser.
That was a playoff atmosphere. And, you know, these fans are in love with the Dodgers. You know, I was here, and they indeed bleed Dodger blue. And, boy, it was exciting. You know, not often would I have loved to play in a game, because I'm so far removed from playing, but this is a game I would enjoy playing in, I think.
You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of talk around the Astros among baseball fans. You know, the way steroids users, some of them aren't in the hall. Some of these guys who cheated in this era, even if it's in a different way, should they be in the hall one day if they have the numbers to do it? A guy like Altuve, if there's suspicion that he did stuff. I would say this. You know, I'm a Yankees fan. I felt the Yankees were cheated in 2017 by the Astros. I'm angry about it. But it's not simply an issue of did players cheat. Competitive people will oftentimes look for an advantage, and sometimes it becomes part of the culture of the game. Gaylord Perry, like the splitter in me and the splitter, right? The spitter, he's like writing books about how he cheated, 300 game winner cheating. So it becomes almost like, to some, a charming kind of part of the game. These guys are all trying, you know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? All this kind of stuff. It's not about just on principle who's honorable enough not to cheat. I think it's about the efficacy of the cheating. Did it actually turn these guys into better players? Now, in the case of the Astros, I do believe it gave them a competitive advantage in that playoff run against my Yankees, against the Dodgers. I do think so. But when you look at the individual players on that team, those are great players. Like, they were not turned, maybe they were turned into marginally better players in high leverage moments, which is bad, by cheating in a way for which there was really no answer. If they're at home and they have an elaborate system that you can't really defend, I'm against that. Obviously, but it's not like in the height of the steroids era when you had guys who never would have gotten a whiff of the Hall of Fame putting up Hall of Fame numbers for their career, right? It's not just about the principle, did they cheat? It's about the efficacy. How effective was the cheating? Did it turn them into something they were not? Maybe it turned the Astros into world champions when they were not otherwise. But there were a bunch of pieces on the Astros who would have been great players whether or not there was cheating going on. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also on SiriusXM Channel 80. Boy, I'll tell you what, if you missed today's show or any part of it, go download the podcast. Boy, did Chris Mortensen set me straight about some stuff on the Indianapolis Colts and Philip Rivers. First of all, on the timeline of recovery for Wentz and the optimism for Wentz and Quentin Nelson. Secondly, on the likelihood of Philip Rivers accepting, even extending an offer to Philip Rivers, but accepting it? Yes, Roger.
You know who else sets you straight?
Who's that?
New friend of the show, Justin Herbert. You didn't like your last question there, but other than that, it was great. You waxed loquaciously about how you love him. He's the top five.
No, Justin Herbert and I are now.
See, people got to listen to the podcast then. Fast. You're set, you know. No.
Anyway, back to the Lakers signings, Raj. That's what people in LA are excited about. By the way, people in Chicago should be excited about what the Bulls have put together. Hey, Max, you're getting on the Knicks for having a ceiling of the second round. What about the Bulls and what about the Heat? Right? Why are you excited for them? I think they're a little better than the Knicks. See what happened as soon as I started talking about the Knicks, Raj? The sign in back of me just went out. What's going on? Who's
bootleg?
That's right. Dolan doing something. But the Knicks, to me, don't have, you know, there's no Jimmy Butler on the team. There's no, you know, or absent that, a young, rising, next-level athletic talent like Zach LaVine. They went in Chicago and put around Zach LaVine, they went and got him backcourt help in the form of Lonzo Ball and DeMar DeRozan. What can't those three do? You need defense, you need passing, you need above-the-rim play, you need three-point shooting, you need mid-range. Like, that's a whole lot of three-headed monster coming at you for the Bulls. And then Vucevic is a load down, one of the best centers in the East. Three or four best centers in the East. You could say top three. Vucevic. Bulls got really good. And then the Heat, like Kyle Lowry and P.J. Tucker. It's a real, real good fits down there. You know, Pat Riley-style players, but they can do what that team needs. Do I think it makes them real championship contenders? No. But I would put the Bulls and the Heat a cut above the New York Knicks, who, by the way, look, Kemba Walker's a buyout. They don't have to commit big money or years to him. But they do to Julius Randle, who is maybe the third best player on a championship team, maybe the second best player on a championship contender, but he's the first best player on the Knicks. And so the question is, when you look at the Knicks roster, Quickly and Rose and now Kemba and Barrett and Randle and Robinson, you have a bunch of guys. But some of these guys are going to have to be attractive enough to other teams. They have enough trade value, enough weight in the trade market that when eventually, if the Knicks maintain this healthy culture that they have now, apparently, when eventually a superstar says, yeah, I want to play for that team, the Knicks have enough assets. They have enough that these contracts don't become liabilities. They're seen as assets that they can go and get that star. Something they have seldom done in my lifetime. All right. We learned a lot today about Carson Wentz, the NBA trade deadline, the Knicks, the Nets. Back tomorrow. Shanahan Golic Jr. coming up. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.